Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Leal welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. Today is Friday, August 2nd, 2013. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Jim McCarty is Carla's husband, the scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Please visit the websites llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more, and the community website bringforth.org. That's bring the number 4, th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I will be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Leal, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty of LL Research. Hey, Carla and Jim, how are you doing today?
We're doing well.
Hanging in there. We are making it through a four-day visit from my brother and three of his friends who have come down here to attend a church conference. So we've been a bit hospitable lately.
And Austin joined us on Monday, so we have a crowd here.
Yeah, we've done a lot of helloing, and we won't be able to see much more of my brother. It's a real pleasure to see him. I don't get to see enough of him, obviously, since he lives in Washington, D.C. And I live in Kentucky, so, you know, ne'er the twain shall meet, except on occasions like this when we're lucky enough to connect. How about you?
Oh, just had another really busy week, but again, can't complain. It's a good busy,
okay.
So, yeah.
Life on planet Earth.
Yeah, and you guys are going to get a lot busier real soon and have a lot more company real soon with the homecoming coming up.
That's right.
Are there still openings for that?
There are still some openings, 5 or 6 openings. We're getting close to full.
Okay, and if anyone's interested in that.
It always fills up right before. So, you know, it's best it's as fast as you can to get your, if you want to have a seat, do it as quickly as possible.
So they can check that out at llresearch.org or the bringforth.org, same website,
right.
And you can get information about that. Do you have the same people show up, a lot of the same people every year, or do you have a lot of new people each year?
We have a lot of new people each year, and then we have the old favorites that we're so glad to see again. But we do get a nice number of new people every year, and it's so much fun to watch them meld into the crowd because this is one place where it really is home. Most places you really can't talk about what you're interested in. If you're interested in the Law of One, most people don't want to hear about it. And you love your friends and your family, but they're not interested in other things. So you feel a bit isolated, and this is a place where you can talk about anything that you're interested in and be accepted. So it feels like home in a very special way, and we're so glad to see that happen each year. It's so neat.
Okay, wonderful. Well, that's great. I'm glad you enjoy that and that you offer your home to everyone. That's really a special thing to do. So, okay, I'm going to go ahead and go to our opening riff. And this is from Ra, session 15.12. Questioner, how does an individual go about balancing himself? What is the first step? I am Ra. The steps are only one. that is an understanding of the energy centers which make up the mind-body-spirit complex. The first balancing is of the Malkuth, or Earth, vibratory energy complex called the Red Ray complex. The next energy complex, which may be blocked, is the emotional or personal complex, also known as the Orange Ray complex. The third blockage resembles most closely that which you have called ego. It is the yellow ray or solar plexus center. The center of heart or green ray is the center from which third density beings may springboard, shall we say, towards infinite intelligence. The blue ray center of energy streaming is the center which, for the first time, is outgoing as well as inpouring. The next center is the pineal or indigo ray center. The indigo ray balancing is quite central to the type of work which revolves about the spirit complex, which has its influx then into the transformation or transmutation of third density to fourth density, it being the energy center receiving the least distorted outpourings of love, light from intelligent energy, and also having the potential for the key to the gateway of intelligent infinity. The remaining center of energy influx is simply the total expression of the entity's vibratory complex of mind, body, and spirit.
Thank you, Monica. If you have read The Law of One closely, you'll see that that is a very heavily edited bit of information that Monica gave, and it was still fairly long. But I wanted to get the idea of the seven energy centers in there. And you may have noticed that they resemble the rainbow, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet, Roy G. Biv. The memory of these colors is helpful in picturing this balancing process about which Don was asking. I talk about this balancing process a lot, and the reason is that the Law of One material is a really nifty interlocking, fairly complex system of philosophy, which really boils down to this is who you are, this is from which you sprang, and this is the place to which you are attempting to go, both in the larger sense and in the immediate sense. So every day, as you look at your day, you come to the end of your day, and you're stealing just a moment to reflect. And you look at what threw you off balance one way or another that day, what caught you. And you think about it, well, why did that catch you? Why, of all of the things that happened that day, did this particular incident catch your attention and engage your judgment? Because when you don't have judgment and you're simply bopping along, moving with joy into the now and not really thinking about anything but just doing the next thing that you need to do in your day, then likely your energy centers are open and you're balanced. And that means that this infinite energy that is streaming up from the center of the earth through our chakra system and out into the universe is able to go through the system in full force, feeding every chakra and energizing the whole as it goes. But if you get caught on something, then it's really helpful to look at what caught you, what energy center did it involve, and so forth. So As you move along in the Law of One material, I strongly advise you to go to session 15 fairly frequently and contemplate these colors, these energy centers, and get in touch with the terminology that the Law of One uses to express how you keep your heart open and your energy up. And it's a simple matter of balance. You know, when you understand the energy centers that make up the mind-body-spirit complex, when you've got this vision in your head that you've seen so many times of the person sitting in the lotus position in meditation, say, and you see this colorful rainbow of colors going up the spine, red, orange, yellow, the lower energy centers, green, the heart chakra, blue and indigo, the centers with which you work the most if you're meditating or attempting to do work in spirit. And then, of course, the violet ray is simply the reading out of what it is that you're vibrating at. Now, the reason this is so central is that this is who you are. It is borne in on you by the culture that you are a male or female, you're old or young, you're pretty or you're not pretty, you're confident or you're not worthy, and all of these different ways of describing the self. And you have a tendency to think of yourself, well, who am I? Well, I'm a librarian and a researcher. And Jim thinks, well, I'm a homesteader and a lawn man. And this is a shortcut for what our society understands, that you are what you do. But in fact, all of this is an illusion. It is a way for you to come into contact with other people, other mind-body-spirit complexes, and do the work that you came here to do, which is basically to learn and to serve. The learning takes place as you continually reflect on how you went off balance during the day. As you look at these things over and over and over again, you begin to get an appreciation of what typically throws you off balance, what is likely to engage your judgment, what makes you nervous, what makes you angry, jealous, and so forth. And when you're in the process of these feelings, you're caught. You're in a kind of prison of your own making. You can't get out of it until you relax and let the judgment go and let balance restore itself. This doesn't mean that you have completely solved the problem. It means that you have accepted that for right now this is the best you could do. And so you allow things to be as they are. You forgive yourself. Very important part of balancing. You forgive yourself for getting caught in the first place, because we all do it over and over again. You forgive whoever else is involved in the transaction, but mostly yourself. It's a lot easier to forgive others than it is to forgive yourself. So when you do this enough times, you can really begin to spot your incarnational lessons. What is it that I came here to learn to do? In my case, it was a simple matter of learning to love without expectation of a return. That is, to give it away for free and not to worry about whether somebody loved me back. I love the prayer of St. Francis where it says, not to be loved but to love, not to be consoled but to console, not to be understood but you understand. Because we're here to use this catalyst. It's okay when it throws us off balance. That's what we're here to work with. These times when it throws us off balance, that's a wake-up call. And it says this is time for you, it's an opportunity for you to engage with your catalyst and do some spiritual work. And as you do this, as you get to know yourself more and more, you begin to know what your lessons are. You can spot it coming, you know, even as it's happening a lot of times after you get good at spotting the lesson. Oh, there it is again. But it always catches you in a slightly different way because you're always learning, and you go through the dark night of the soul and you learn at that level. Then you come around again and the lesson is there in a slightly different form because you've learned it at the lower level. Now it's time to take it to a slightly more difficult level and give it to you again and again and again. It seems that within the process of living, we have an unending appetite for these lessons. So this is how we learn: the rainbow of energies in our body, the allowing of the love light of the infinite creator to keep moving through our body no matter what, moving through and giving us energy. And when we get caught up, then we turn to doing inner work, and we ask for help with that. And I'm going to ask for June to talk about the process of balancing.
Well, Ross suggested at the end of the day is a good time to do balancing exercises because you've got the entire day's catalyst, all these that you've gone through during the day to look at and to see if there are any places that were either unusually positive or joyful and unusually negative or sorrowful in either direction. Because what we're trying to do in these incarnations to graduate from the third and fourth density is to be able to respond to whatever catalyst comes our way with unconditional love, which is neither really happy, joyful, crazy, wild, or sad, depressed, having difficulties. So in order to work towards that goal, then we take whatever movement away from a calm, easy acceptance of the catalyst, and we work with it. For example, today, I could look at my day, and I could see a number of things that I could work with. I see more people in the house than usual, and I feel a little bit crowded because I'm a hermit type of person. I'm a loner. And so I could look at that. There is another person that we're working with, and I'm hoping that she will help in the sale of our land in a certain way. So I have a slight dedication to an outcome rather than trusting that things are well and will come out well. And the one I guess that will move me the most is that when I was outside working today, I was pulling the vines off of the bushes in the corner of the property. There's wild grapevines that grow there, and if you let them grow too long, they'll kill the bushes that they're on. So I was pulling them out. And at one point, it was a lot of pulling. They were up tall, maybe 15 or so feet and 10 to 15 feet. At one point, I looked on the ground, and I saw this little nest, and it was empty. And I thought, well, yeah, that's, a nest that's been used this year. It's not really time for little babies or anything, so okay, that's all right. And I pulled some more and pulled some more, and then I saw a little baby bird, and it was dead. And I had killed it, and I didn't know that until it was over. And I looked a little further. There was another baby bird, and it was still alive. So I buried the one that was dead and said a little prayer. And then I took the one that was alive, and I put it back in the nest. I had gloves on, fortunately, because the mother probably wouldn't take the little baby back if it smelled humans. And I climbed up, and I made a little platform for the nest I'd found, and I put the nest and the little baby bird up there and said a little prayer. So tonight, when I meditate and do balancing, what I would do is look at the sorrow of having killed that little bird. Even though it was, totally unexpected and unwitting, I still did it. I was still responsible for it. And in the balancing, I would allow that great feeling of despair or sadness to get as large as possible. And then I would think about that little bird as being the creator. And I would allow that thought to be a seed, that little bird was the creator, like everything else and everyone else is in this infinite creation. And I would allow that feeling of the creator to grow and to grow and to realize that that creator can feel an infinity of beingness and of timelessness in whatever moments it may have had. I imagine this little bird was no more than 4 days old. His eyes were still closed. So I would begin to feel that this little bird was the creator, was experiencing the intelligent infinity of the creator and just being alive and of feeling the nest rock and opening the mouth because you're expecting the mother to give you a worm, of breathing the air, of feeling the wind, of just being alive for however long it was. And for the creator, that could be, you know, an infinity in what we call a little span of time. So I would allow that feeling to grow and to grow and to grow until I feel that that little bird experience, an infinity of experience, that was, you know, at peace with all that is, and so was I. So that would be the way I would work with that particular piece of balancing. And with the other items, I would do the same thing. Feeling crowded in the house, I would realize that, you know, I am crowded, and I would let that feeling get bigger and bigger and bigger. And then I would realize that I also am the creator, just as that little bird was a creator. I'm the creator, and I can be in a very small space, you know, in my skin. I can be. I can meditate. I can, and then I can also expand my world of being. I can go out there and, you know, take a swim in the world of lots of people. And I can see that both of those are ways of knowing the creator. And the important point in all of this is to realize that whether you're feeling the positive or the negative aspect of any experience, that you accept yourself for having both as means for you to know the creator. And the creator, incidentally, to know itself through your experience. That seems to be the reason for all the creation. And then I would also look at that. The third one was the person we were working with to help hope that she helps with information to help sell our land. And look at this desire for things to fall in a certain way that I understand so I can feel comforted. And realize that there is an infinity of plenty on the waters. And if I simply accept all that is and do what I can, then release it, there, you know, all is well, all is one, and it will work out for the best. So I would allow that to get larger and larger, the feeling of there being completeness, of bounty, of enough. And that would equal the feeling of having to control things to make them come out in a way I think is the way they should come out. And I would accept myself for having both of these as means for me to know the creator and the creator to know itself. So right off the top of my head, those three items would be, you know, for me this day, what I would be working on.
Excellent. Thank you, Jim. And I have some follow-up questions for you, Jim. But first, let me go back to my follow-up questions for Carla, or for either of you, actually. Carla, I guess this was a rare occasion that we read an excerpt from The Law of One that was actually edited. And if anybody would like to read the whole transcript, you can find that at lawofone.info, and you can search the session, and this was 15.12. And I have a question about something that was edited out. The center of heart or green ray is the center from which third density beings may springboard, shall we say, towards infinite intelligence. Blockages in this area may manifest as difficulties in expressing what you may call universal love or compassion. Okay, that was a sentence that was left out. Then the next sentence is, the blue ray center of energy streaming is the center which, for the first time, is outgoing as well as inpouring. Okay, how is it that the green ray, because we think of the heart as outpouring, outgoing, and Rod just said that blockages in the heart center may manifest as difficulties in expressing universal love or compassion. I think of compassion as something that's outgoing. So how is it that the green ray isn't outgoing if it's expressing compassion, which sounds like it's an outgoing energy?
Yeah, perfectly good question. And here's my best shot at an answer. In the green ray, we can give and give. And most of the time, it's accepted and appreciated, and people feel it, and they feel that radiance. They feel that love, that acceptance, that open heart, and they just love it. They love being in that open heart space with you. And it does fine, but there's always that person that blocks you and doesn't accept the open heart, and it's vulnerable to that. That is, you simply cannot give to that person. The person has blocked it out. And in the blue ray, which is the throat ray, the blue chakra, has to do with speech, teaching, honesty, compassionate wisdom, truth. More than anything else, it has to do with telling the truth. And really, nobody can block your truth. If you say what you have to say, it's out there. It's there. And unlike the love, which is personal and is offered in the case in which it is not accepted, it's offered personally, and it's not accepted by a person. The Blu-ray is simply the words are out there, and they are as they are. And a person may wave them aside, but it's just like having something in print. It's been written, it's been spoken, it's there, it's the crystalline truth, and it doesn't get knocked aside. Maybe the person doesn't want to listen to it, but since it is an impersonal energy, it's not vulnerable to somebody just going, I don't want to hear that. Well, that's okay. The person doesn't have to hear that for the Blu-ray to function properly. The green ray can function just fine, as I said, if you're just sharing universal love and you don't have a person with whom you're relating. That's what a lot of people do, that passive radiation of the light all the time, and that's really their service in this world, is simply to hold the space, which is of a higher vibration than the space around it. And they're basically lightening the consciousness of the planet by their own little best. But as long as you focus on one person and you're relating to that person, you are vulnerable to the person simply refusing or being unable to accept your offering. So that's the reason that the Blu-ray is not vulnerable and the heart ray is vulnerable. I mean, look at Jesus, and I often like to look at Jesus. He was offering the truth, but in the end, they crucified him for it, and that was okay with him because it was his mission, as he understood it, to accept whatever it is he had to accept in order to express love under any condition whatsoever. So, obviously, he was not accepted. He was despised and hated and thwarted and killed like a common thief. And yet, due to the strength of his vibration, he was able to move into the heavenly realms and move through the gateway to intelligent infinity by holding to this love no matter what. It's not that you can't hold to your love. It's not that you can't do that. It's that a person can refuse it. And a person, just like a person can't refuse a headline that's out there, a person can't refuse the Blu-ray truth. Whether they accept it or they don't accept it is irrelevant to the fact that it has been spoken and it's out there. Does that make any sense, Monica?
Well, it does, but to be honest, it doesn't quite answer what's still nagging at me. I guess I'm being a stickler here, but it sounds to me like what you're saying is, and I do understand what you're saying, and that all makes sense. But in regards to this quote that's saying that the blue energy is the first one that's outgoing as well as inpouring, then the only way to make sense of that would be to say that in order for energy to be outgoing, it would need to be received. But can't you still have outgoing energy? I mean, wasn't Jesus still offering the energy? Wasn't the energy still going out, even though
right.
it was not
even
received?
Even though it obviously wasn't accepted by his society, it was perfect, and it manifested itself in the resurrection. So it was a triumph and a wonderful expression of the manifestation of the truth, that love survives and love is all that there truly is. But in terms of sharing with somebody else, there's something called an energy transfer that needs to take place with the heart. And you share and you get shared back. And it's when the person refuses to share back to you that energy is incomplete, and that the personal part of it didn't become an energy transfer. It simply went out. It didn't come back.
And, okay, you know, so it does go out, but it's not a complete circuit.
Right. It's not a complete circuit between you and the person who refused it.
Okay,
because
that's
still different.
Because
you have nothing
to
do with it, you know, you don't have any control over whether that person accepts you or not.
Because what you're saying is it still is going out, it's just not coming back or being received, you know, at the heart level. And I guess what I'm still stuck on is Ross saying that the blue is the first one that is outgoing at all, without regards to whether it's received or whether it's complete circuit. It's just, it's that's saying that the heart does not, the heart energy does not go out. If the blue one is the first one that goes out, then that means the heart does not. You see what I'm saying?
I kind of look at the heart energy as, well, the other terms that we used, understanding, unconditional love. It seems like it's more of experiencing all the catalysts that comes the seeker's way with love. But it's like the female quality of awaiting the reaching. It kind of glows, and it's obvious, and it's powerful in its acceptance and seeing all as the creator. But there's something that's not quite, you know, it's not pushing itself or expressing itself in a, I don't know, a forceful way, like the blue, the radiance, the brilliance, the teaching, the conversing, really sending out the energy for the purpose of sending it out. It seems like the green is more, its purpose is to be love and to experience love, and not to really try to transform or to go and be active, to look for ways to express love. It just whatever comes its way, it loves. That's just a feeling I'm getting for it. I'm trying to put words to it, but I think there's a different quality to each one, and that when those two are balanced in the sixth density into what we see as spiritual power, then both of those qualities are put together in such a way that they are more effective than either one of them alone, and that real service or the changes of consciousness at will can occur with a balance between the two. But there is a significant difference, I think, between the two, and it's got something to do with the general nature of the biological sexes, the way they're expressed.
Okay, and you both are giving really excellent answers. I mean, there's a lot of really good detailed information here, so I don't have any issue with anything you're saying.
It's not satisfying you. It's not doing any good yet.
Well, no, it is.
I understand
that. It's rounding out. It's good information. But on this one little point, let's look at the example that you gave today, Jim, about the little bird. I mean, did you not feel love and compassion for the little bird?
Oh,
and wasn't
yeah.
that energy going out from your heart to that little bird?
Well, I hope so. But,
okay.
Yeah, I really do hope so.
Then that sure sounds to me like energy comes out of the heart.
Yeah,
what
it
I'm
does.
Hung up on.
It does. But I think it's.
But.
I think.
But then the.
Go ahead.
The quote says that the blue is the first time. It's the first energy center where there is outgoing energy.
Right. Well, I'll admit,
as well as incoming.
I certainly
well
don't understand
right.
it, and you know I think that's a big problem we have with most of these concepts is that they're really hard to understand because Ross's understanding is not of his density. But we got to try. So we try to carve out some sort of a grasp of the situation and put words to it. And this is a difficult one because I think you have an excellent point.
Well, I just know that when I offer my love to somebody and it's refused, I feel squashed like a bug. But when I do the inner work and I slowly begin to balance and I come to realize, oh, that's because love is not always returned, and sometimes it's okay for the heart to be squashed like a bug. It's still doing its work. It's just not receiving a transfer. Then I think it's been graduated to the blue ray of truth, and it's also become impersonal. The person has no longer any ability to hurt me because I have become aware that I'm working with the law of one, loving the creator and so forth, and if that person rejects me and slams me at a personal level, that it doesn't matter. But that's a hard one. And I do feel my heart being squished when you know, love is rejected for some reason. But
and
I can still move back into work and come to the awareness of the universality of that love and its truth, regardless of how it is received. And at that point, I think I've moved from a green ray to blue ray.
Okay, and and I definitely see what you're saying there. You know, I just had an idea. Is it possible we're looking at this wrong? Because let's try reversing this and see what happens. Just for fun, just out of curiosity. You know, when I read this, I took it to mean the blue ray. Okay, it says the blue ray center of energy streaming is the center which for the first time is outgoing as well as inpouring. I just assumed it meant it's the first one that's outgoing and the others are all inpouring. But what if it's reversed? What if it's what Ra really is saying is the first one that's inpouring as well as outgoing? And the earlier chakras are actually outgoing. Because if you look at the third chakra, it says blockages in this center will often manifest as distortions towards power, manipulation, and other social behaviors concerning those close and those associated with the mind-body-spirit complex. Well, if a person is controlling another person, is that not an outgoing energy?
It sure is.
Rather than inpouring?
I like your idea.
So maybe,
well, certainly a thought.
Maybe the lower
chakras are
the ones.
I would be reluctant to say such a thing, but it's certainly worth a thought.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm willing to entertain some ramifications here.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's just a thought to consider because, you know, it seems to me we were kind of making an assumption it meant that. But if you look at the third chakra, it sounds to me like that saying that chakra is outgoing energy. Maybe the lower chakras are the ones that are outgoing and the blue ray is the first one that's inpouring. And because the upper chakras, you're getting an inpouring of cosmic energy, right? I mean, as you open your third eye,
I still think that I find it easier to understand in the sense that the heart doesn't think. The heart is, the heart feels. Whereas when you've moved into blue ray, you have become the creator and you're functioning as the creator. And in that case, you are out, you are originating rather than allowing the love light of the infinite creator to beam through you as the heart chakra can so beautifully do. But, you know, there's an impersonal sense that seems to me to be higher than the personal sense. And that I'd probably have the sticking point there. However, I think it's really worthwhile to chew on that for a while, and I will.
Okay. Jen, did you have any other comments?
Oh, I just had these ideas floating around in my mind about the first three energy centers, I believe Ross said, the intelligent energy that comes through them is rather a gift. It's kind of predetermined. There isn't a choice made by the seeker yet because they haven't gotten enough spiritual identity or haven't chosen enough the direction they're going. But at some point, somewhere around the opening of the green ray, there is enough of this choice of which direction to go, positive or negative, service to self, service to others, that the entity itself begins to make, say, pre-incarnative choices, chooses parents, whereas before it was more of a random thing. And begins to choose more of the catalyst that occurs during the incarnation, or could occur, and will be given a chance to occur, shall we say, during the incarnation. So I'm thinking, well, that's sort of the energy of the logos, intelligent energy, being given to, coming into these energy, lower energy centers, when the entity becomes consciously aware enough of this process to be able to partake in it, then the entity is beginning to give out, I guess, to make choices that carry ramifications, creating the possibility for the incarnation beforehand. So I didn't. That's all the further I got with it was, you know, thinking about how what you just said might be a possibility.
Well, then there's the six-pointed star. You know, the triangle pointing up is the matter reaching up to spirit, and then the triangle pointing down is spirit
right.
reaching down into matter. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe Ra was talking about when, you know, the word inpouring meant inpouring from spirit coming down.
Right.
Maybe. Okay.
I think
and now
the nifty thing about this all is because we can always, all of us always learn something. It's not something that you just learn the dogma and then you've got it, because there's a whole lot of room for experimentation and discovery in the Law of One Information that Ra shared with us.
Yeah, that's for sure. We've read that those quotes many, many, many times, and you read it, and all of a sudden, hey, wait a minute, you know, what does Ra mean about this? And then you kind of look at it in a different way. Okay, and then I have a question regarding what you said earlier, Jim, telling your story. Well, first of all, that was a great story and a great example of illustrating how to reflect upon your day and utilize this balancing exercise. But I noticed something interesting you said about the little bird. You said that you focused on seeing the creator in that little bird. And that's real interesting that you said that, because there was actually a discussion on the forum, the brainforth.org, about that very thing. Are animals other selves? And there was the question raised, okay, the quote from 10.14, exercise one, exercise two, you know, where Ra says, gaze at the creation, see the creator.
See the creator.
You know, gaze at other self. Yeah. And so the question then becomes, you know, and of course Ra talks about other selves, you know, throughout the material. So the question is, what is the definition of an other self? And something you just said, Jim, that you saw the creator in this bird. So do you consider the bird an other self, or do you consider the bird part of just the creation as the trees and the grass?
Did
you even see it that way?
Well, I've always loved the outdoors, so it's always been more obvious to me that everything out there is the creator. And I think that everything in here, in our room here, that they're made by human beings too, is also the creator. I don't think there's anything but the creator. Sometimes it's easier to see or accept a thing or being as the creator because it's maybe traditional or beautiful or romantic or whatever. But there isn't anything that's not the creator. That's not possible, because the creator made all that is for the purpose of getting to know itself. And each of us helps that process out. And there's all kinds of reflections of the creator around us. It's everywhere. If you want to look at that as being your daily reality, I think that could really... Well, number one, it would slow you down a lot, and you probably wouldn't keep all your appointments, but you might be getting the feeling of the majesty and the mystery and the power of every moment, the possibility of every moment. We zip by so many of them so quickly because we don't see the Creator very many places. Maybe on Sunday for a lot of folks in church, they make a shot at it. But really, if you look at everything around you and you look from a mindset that wants to know and is open to all of this possibility of the infinity and the unity of all creation, then the truth of that is everywhere around us, and it's astounding.
Yeah, I agree. And yet there was a difference between that little bird and the grapevines.
Yeah.
Right? Because there were a lot of grapevines
sure.
you were pulling.
Yeah,
and,
still
you know.
Not, you know, we're all the creators. Some of us are really small creators, and we got a lot of learning to do. It would be also very possible to feel the same thing about the grapevine, that it's the creator, and I tore it down, but I did it consciously. You know, I was a destroyer. For me, this was Armageddon for that grapevine. And, you know, you could get into that. But overall, however you looked at it all, the ultimate conclusion would be that you've been dealing with nothing but the Creator, and you are also the Creator, and this is Maya. This is a game. This is a dance. It is an illusion, but it's an illusion with a purpose, and it's around us everywhere. The mirrors are infinite.
Do y'all eat the grapes?
Unfortunately, these wild grapevines don't produce grapes. They just produce big vines, lots of leaves.
And they strangle the trees.
They can be six inches in diameter. These things are monstrous. The little ones today, I was pulling, are about an inch or half an inch.
Yeah,
well,
they,
maybe
they can be death for the trees.
Pardon?
Go ahead, Carla.
What did you say, Monica?
I said maybe once they're pruned, they'll start producing grapes.
Oh, no, they never do. We also have wild cherries that very seldom produce cherries. Occasionally, when they are really good, they do. I'm not sure how they all got I think they got their name because they look like real cherry trees, and the grapevines look like real grapevines.
Oh, maybe that's
not
it.
Not real grapevines.
Because I heard about the wild grapes and went, oh, send it down here. I would love to have wild grapes, but I thought you meant producing grapes.
Yeah.
leaves.
If they produce grapes, I might be more favorably inclined toward them, but that's just my shortcoming. That's my distortion. You know, they're still the creator without grapes.
Well, you know, I think that the heart of the question about the little bird is it a mind-body complex or is it a mind-body-spirit complex? And it is a mind-body complex. It doesn't have the spirit yet. It's acting totally on an instinct, and it will go back into its the gene pool of its kind and find life again. But that doesn't mean that you can't love it dearly and cherish it. And I think that when you do pick out a pet, you are investing that pet until the pet becomes ready to start on third density. You invest that pet with so much love, and it begins to love you back with a more refined love, and it becomes a little person. And I know our cats are little people, definitely. They're not mind-body complexes. They've definitely become mind-body spirits.
But
so
how do you know
when
you look at an animal
question,
whether they're at that point or not?
Well, that's according to the law of one material. And
but
I think
you don't know at what point that animal soul becomes a mind-body-spirit complex. Does it? We don't know if it happens in one lifetime or over the course of many lifetimes.
Right. It would have to be able to both give and receive love.
Well, I mean, I've had many cats and dogs
that
were already like that, you know. They're already... And I've had dogs and cats come back to me, reincarnate again, so clearly they live multiple lifetimes as mind-body-spirit complexes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like it happens in 1 second and then poof, they're gone, you know.
No,
so when we look at
it,
they don't want to be people yet because they want to be with us some more.
Maybe. Yeah, my puppy I've got now, I'm quite sure she's the same dog that I had before. No question about it.
Well, it's happened to both of us too. Yeah.
Yeah.
We recognize the souls from before. They're just, you know, it's the same energy.
But just as you can't. Go ahead.
Even some of the same tics, ways of expressing, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Pick up the same personality. It just repeats, and the quality of devotion, it just can't be missed.
Mm-hmm. Well, just as you can't tell at first glance, looking at a human, where they're at in relation to harvestability, you know, you just look at, you know, a mass of people and you have no idea which ones are relatively young souls, which ones are destined to repeat third density, which ones are ready to move on, and which ones are wanderers until you get to know them.
Which makes Jim's point about just accepting all as the creator apt, because you really can't judge. You have to see people as the creator first and not wait to be, you know, prove to me that you have a spirit, you know, prove to me that you're an old soul. You know, you need to see that mind, body, spirit as one, see the creator and not doubt the nature of it. I mean, even those that are brand new to third density, you know, they have the capability. They have all of the energy centers open and in potentiation, and it's just a matter of, as you know, I think as you get to know somebody, you begin to feel where they are.
Yeah,
where
likewise.
Where their energies are focused.
By the same token, we can say the same, you know, about the animal kingdom, that you know, there are many animals in varying degrees of
definitely.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's what I meant about, you know, if you look at that little bird, you don't know, that little bird might have been, you know, might not be going back into the pool of
no, and if you believe Buddhists, it was transmogrification, hard word to say, that bird might have been an advanced soul that decided to take an incarnation as a little bird. You know, you might be talking to Gandhi or something.
Okay,
no,
well,
really
we've been... I wasn't trying to make you feel guilty. I thought it was wonderful that you saved the living one. I mean,
yeah,
you didn't intend
to. Yeah, I was so glad to find a live one.
Yeah, I thought that was really nice. So you don't need to feel guilty. Goodness.
yeah, I did everything
okay.
I could.
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay. We have spent most of the hour talking about that, but I think we covered a lot of interesting points. So we just probably have time for one question, and that is from Randy. Now, this is actually part two of his question from last week that we didn't get to. I am one that has felt very alone in this world, and I had an obsession to learn for those three years at an expense which was somehow isolating myself from everyone. In effect, I find it very difficult to communicate my love and knowledge to others without overwhelming them. No matter how small or simple I express it, I find people generally seem to stay away from me, or I stay away from them, not sure which. I could continue, but there's no need. Parts of my ego want to ask if I can find out if I'm a wanderer, even though I hear the answer. It could be difficult to hear the heart over the ego.
That's true. And I think that if you suspect that you're a wanderer, you probably are. And, you know, quit wondering about it and just realize that is your nature, and that explains some things about you. It doesn't exhaust you, but it does give you some idea of why you came here and what your job is, which has to do with the passive radiation of light and holding consciousness that's higher than the general miasma about one. But I think that the point here is that he feels lonely, or he or she, Randy, feels lonely because he is isolated, and it's what I was talking about earlier about homecoming, is one is often isolated when one has the goal of learning to become a magical personality or an adept, as opposed to one that is careless with his energy. He has wanted to learn. He had to isolate himself to some extent to do that, and it seems selfish, but in truth, when that happens, it's part of the energy having to do with becoming an adept, and it just means that you're not able to work without, to some extent, disassociating yourself from the things that are going on around you, because the things that are going on around you have very little to do with what you're interested in. So you focus on your spiritual studies, you do a lot of inner work, and it takes you into a place where you couldn't have gone before because you just didn't have the time to work at it and to get this sort of under your belt. Now, after this process has occurred and you are a more magical personality, more of an adept, then you can begin to relate to people from that position of being an adept. But as Randy says, it seems that no matter how quietly, simply, gently he talks about some of this information, it's too much. And it's because it's like asking somebody to speed up, to get into a different gear than the person is used to. And it just doesn't make sense. And so the person disdains it or rejects it or just isn't interested in it. And the more this happens, the more such a person begins to feel like it's probably hopeless, that nobody is ever going to want to talk to him about this stuff, and he might as well just not try. But here in 80.12, I was looking for this. The questioner says, then you say this effect of disassociation on the service to others adept is a stumbling block or slowing down process in reaching the goal that he aspires to. And Ross says this is incorrect. This disassociation from the miasma of illusion and misrepresentation of each and every distortion is a quite necessary portion of an adept's path. It may be seen by others to be unfortunate. It's sort of like when the teen is going through the process of individuation, and the way he learns out who he is by trying, I'm not like my parents, I'm not like that, I'm not like that, and gradually carving out for himself his own identity, and in part it has to do with not being like his parents. Well, later on in life he discovers how wise his parents really were, and, you know, but still this process is necessary for the teen to become a healthy adult. And it seems selfish, it seems difficult at the time, and of course it is very difficult, but at the same time, it is part of how the person gets to be a grown-up. And I think that this desire to be an adept is very strong in many of the people that read our material and respond to it, and that desire to become a more magical person, a person that can, by definition, create changes in consciousness by thought, is going to be a person that has gone through some periods of some seeming isolation from society. But it doesn't mean he's rejected society. It means that in order to focus on inner things, he has had to be apart from the buzz, you know, the mindless acceptance of the constant talk about, well, what's fashionable, what's in, what's hip, what's sexy, what's this, what's that, and which generally has to do with virtually nothing, and has that capacity to move into a higher gear, if you will, of thinking and acting and being. And is a more conscious person, a more alive person, a more effective person. And this seeming period of disassociation is part of it. And that's what I would say to Randy, that don't try to communicate your views to other people. That's really, unless somebody asks you questions, then you can answer the questions the best you can. But just consider yourself to be good as you are, and to relate to people that are good as they are, and relate on the things that you do have in common, which, you know, you still do. You still enjoy the things that you eat, and you have preferences of various kinds that you can relate to people with. Relate to them on their terms, and just create, you know, keep doing the inner work on your own time. And it doesn't mean that you can't talk to anybody. It means that you're going to have to find a certain type of person that you could talk to. And that's why we really created the blog. That's why we have bringforth.org with its many forums and conversations going on, and where people can talk about these things that are interesting to them and not too interesting to most people. Who are more interested in the buzz. And so, you know, try participating in the forums. Try finding people through the email that you really do enjoy communicating with, and create arrangements where you could continue your conversations. That's something that our site does allow, you know, with discretion. And try that, because I think it'll help. And then, of course, there are things like the homecoming, which are places where you really can let go and be yourself and not worry about being accepted, because you will be. Everybody here is also in that same boat. So those are the things that I would share. And Randy, I hope that you are able to enjoy all of the things that you have learned and give yourself a good pat on the back for doing the inner work and for becoming a person that's more capable of vibrating at a higher rate and thereby being a more effective instrument of love and light from the Creator to the Creator through this process that we call living. Good luck to you.
Okay, thank you so much, Carla, and you also, Jim. I think this was very, very interesting, covered a lot of good topics there. And we will see you next week. I want to let everybody know we are here every Friday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. You've been listening to In the Now with Carla L. Reichert and Jim McCarty. Please go to llresearch.org and check out the archive website, the Law of One material, channeling transcripts, and much more. And you can also check out bringforth.org. That's bring, the number 4th.org. And you can submit questions there for the radio show. And we will be here next week at 8 o'clock Eastern. See you then.